Great Country Q 94. It's Coffee with Kyle, the extended version from Dunkin' Donuts and Prairie du Chien. We haven't done one of these in a while.
No, it's been a couple months.
Kind of slacking.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
It's been really time constraints more than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, apparently you're like a busy guy or something. Okay. I don't know. Or maybe you just claim you're a busy guy.
That's probably it. It all depends on who you ask.
Yeah. If you would ask my mom, I need better time management skills.
Yeah, I mean, there's not really many weeks where I like to stay at my office past, you know, 9 p.m. But
yeah,
this past week seemed to be that week. And so, yeah, there's just a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah. Well, not as much stuff as the police department in Moscow, Idaho have been dealing with.
Yeah, yeah.
You haven't had a quadruple homicide. Has Prairie du Chien ever had a quadruple homicide?
Not to my knowledge. I believe before my time here, we had a suspected double homicide that actually turned out to be a homicide-suicide.
Okay.
But that was determined by the state crime lab that came in and walked through the scene and kind of explained how that was possible.
Okay.
So, not to my knowledge, but...
I mean, you've had homicides.
I've only been here a short period of time, so...
Isn't it like 17 years?
Yeah, 18, 19, but that doesn't matter. I mean, in the grand scheme of Prairie du Chien...
1673.
I'm just a little dot on the line of time. You are a sliver.
Yeah. But we talked about this a couple weeks ago during the on-air version about the Moscow, Idaho quadruple homicide right after they had arrested the suspect. And what was really interesting about that, and we talked about this, I think, too, is, you know, it was four young kids. They were all good-looking kids. They were all, you know, predominantly white. The internet really, like, grabbed hold of that. And everybody on the internet thought they were a detective.
Yeah. That is very common nowadays.
Well, yeah, but there are certain cases. Because, I mean, there's the guy out in Connecticut or something that chopped up his wife.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, that's not getting the same amount of attention.
No.
And
how about that guy searching his kids' iPad for how to dispose of his... I mean, come on.
I have read it, right?
Oh, my goodness, guy.
How long does it take before a body decomposes?
Like,
what rock are you living under to know that your Google search history can be traced?
Like, I feel like there's enough crime TV coverage that he should know that they're going to find this stuff out, man.
You would think, right?
Oh, my goodness.
Maybe they need to... I don't know. But
this guy out in Idaho, he was a criminology major and still fumbled, so...
Well, and that's what I was going to talk about is he... you know, I think it came out this week that he had followed the girls on Instagram.
Yep.
He had visited the place that two of them worked.
I believe so, yeah.
And then they were able to use his cell phone data to see how many times he was around the house.
Yeah, yep. That's called geofencing.
Come on, man. Turn off your cell phone.
Yeah.
If you're going to go stalk somebody.
He actually turned it off when he went and killed them, though.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
the data, anyways. But,
that's the time he thought it through. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to go do it.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about this is there were so many internet sleuths out there. And everybody believed that...
Somebody committed the perfect crime.
That somebody committed the perfect crime that... The Moscow Police Department, the Idaho State Police, that they were essentially incompetent and they had zero leads.
Yep.
If you searched anything online, it was zero leads.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, like one day it was, hey, they arrested this guy in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And are charging him with, you know, four counts of first degree murder, whatever the charge was. And everybody's like, wait, what?
Where did this come from?
Oh, and then... What was interesting to me, and I, is it the search affidavit, the arrest? I don't even remember the correct terminology now.
Well, I imagine there's several affidavits.
There were some affidavits.
Yeah, so the affidavits support warrants. So,
yes.
You know, in our world, we typically type affidavits, submit them to our district attorney for review. Our district attorney supports that affidavit saying, yes, these facts support our need to get a search warrant, and they support that a crime has probably been committed, and it was probably whatever you're looking to search probably has some type of connection to that crime. And so our district attorney signs off on that, supports that affidavit, and then it goes to a judge In Wisconsin, you know, here we would go to Lynn Ryder. Sometimes we go to, you know, other people when Lynn is absent, if she's on vacation or sick or what have you. We go to other folks that can sign warrants as well. That's come up in a few cases where people have said, well, that's not even the judge. Well, the judge isn't available every single 24/7. Minute of every day. Yeah. I mean, it would be great, but she just isn't. So, so you write that affidavit, you write a coinciding search warrant, and then...
Arrest warrant.
Well, either or. You can have an arrest warrant. Yeah, okay. I mean, you can write an affidavit.
I think that's what I read.
Yeah, you can write an affidavit to support an arrest warrant, but you can also write an affidavit to support a search warrant for a phone, a property, a garage, a vehicle, you name it. You can write that search warrant for that.
I think what I read was the arrest warrant.
Sure.
Because it was like 19 pages.
Yeah.
And what was interesting to me, and of course, not all of it was, there's parts that were redacted.
Yeah.
Makes sense. But what was interesting to me was the amount of legwork that was done by the local police department there, the state police, and then working with the Washington State University police, the campus police.
Yep.
Then the police department in Philadelphia where he lived. I mean, there were so many agencies working together, and the amount of data that they compiled and then had to put into this search warrant.
Yeah.
I was impressed.
Yeah, I mean, in
or
essence...
Or arrest warrant.
Yeah, in essence, your affidavit lays out the meat and potatoes of what's going on.
Yeah.
I like to, you know, the first paragraph is kind of the background of you as an investigator and what makes you qualified to come to the conclusion that you're coming to. You know, this type of thing probably had multiple of those paragraphs. And then it kind of goes into, you know, the facts as you know them, when a crime was committed to you, what that criminal offense is, what statute number that criminal offense is controlled by. And then it goes into step-by-step of the facts of the case that then support that arrest warrant or search warrant. So affidavits can be very lengthy in
pages. This has got to be, like, tedious.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, Lori, is you are risking your career by putting that on paper.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
Because if you're wrong, you could potentially lose your job because they could challenge the... You know, how truthful that affidavit is. And if you lie in an affidavit, you might as well quit your job because you're not gonna be able to testify in court again.
Does it happen a lot?
It happens.
Does it?
Yeah.
I guess what I was just impressed by was that not only did they do all of the legwork, then you have to do the legwork to like lay all of this out in a way that a judge is gonna sign off on it. And that a defense attorney, there's no holes in it.
Yeah. Well, the defense attorney's job is to find holes in it regardless.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, typically what happens is when we submit a warrant, whether it's an arrest warrant or a search warrant for something, again, it goes to our judge. Most of the time, if she has issues with it, she'll give it back to us with feedback saying, hey, I don't think you've met this criteria. And then we have more legwork to do. Or maybe we just omitted that and we need to go back to our reports and include that information that she's requesting in that warrant. I have submitted affidavits and not gotten any feedback, and it's been denied. Just, hey, this...
We don't want to.
We're not signing this. And I'm like, well, okay, well, where do I go from here? And, you know, it's really my job to support that search warrant through an affidavit. There are some places where you don't put it on paper. You go in front of a magistrate or in front of a judge and raise your right hand and testify, and a court reporter types it all out. So you don't really type it out yourself.
Hmm.
Here, we typically put it on paper and submit it to the judge that way. So... And there's a whole bunch of nuances. Like, people don't understand that you have to serve a warrant within 5 days of issuance. So you have a 5-day window to either serve that warrant on that person, that arrest warrant, or serve that search warrant on a house or a car or a phone or what have you. And then you have 48 hours to report back to the court what you found. And so it's called a warrant return.
Mm-hmm.
And we file a document with the courts and detail what we found. We also have to provide a copy of that warrant to the person that's being served. We also have to provide a list of items that we took during the course of our search. So, this is as simple as a blood warrant for an OWI. If we pull somebody over and they refuse to give us blood, we call the judge in the middle of the night and we go through a warrant, and the judge grants a warrant sometimes, maybe not. And then we you know, force blood from that person. We still have to do a return on that. We do a return back to the court saying, on this date and time, we serve this warrant and we receive blood. There's times where we return warrants 48 hours later and we have multiple attachments of pieces of paper, you know, showing what we took from the residence or from the car. So
I think the, in my crime novels anyway, which we've proven are very accurate.
Right. Yeah.
Or if you watch any, you know, Law and Order, any of those, it's always trying to get enough for a warrant.
Sure.
That's not enough for a warrant. That's not enough. And, you know, XYZ cop goes to the district attorney or no, you need more.
Yep.
Is that always like the case?
Yeah, it's definitely a thing. Yeah, you're always working towards supporting an affidavit to get a search
warrant. Because you could have a hunch and you could be like, this is what's going down, but I need XYZ to be proven before I can.
Yeah, not I don't grant warrants, so you would have to talk to a judge about like what criteria they specifically look for. But it is an establishment of probable cause is what it is. And so in school, in basic recruit school, we're taught that if I took that affidavit and I walked up to Joe Citizen walking down Black Hawk Avenue and I gave that affidavit to them, they would come to the conclusion that based on the facts in that affidavit, what your conclusion is probably the case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's probable cause.
Yeah.
And so that, but again, you're putting your career out there. You know, when you raise your right hand and swear to that affidavit, you better have your ducks in a row.
So you're not just throwing these out willy-nilly either.
Oh my goodness, no.
No.
No, it's just, that's just not a thing.
No. So again, going back to the Idaho case and, you know, it being 3 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever it was, they were definitely putting something together that was, I don't want to say ironclad, but dotting all the I's, crossing all the T's, so that when they arrested him, when they went to that judge and said, we're ready to make an arrest.
Yep. Well, and the other thing is warrants and affidavits are open records. They're subject to open records. So I would imagine that through the course of them serving search warrants in this case, they requested that the warrants and affidavits be sealed for 30 days.
Yeah.
And so that's very common, actually, especially in, like, drug cases. We seal those affidavits or try to get those sealed. We try to get the judge to sign off on the sealance of those documents because there may be other co-defendants that we don't want to have that information that is supporting the arrest of somebody else or the search warrant of somebody else's residence. It's interesting to me because I think people have a false persona that we sit in our office, we type an affidavit, we type a search warrant, and we go. And it's just completely wrong. We have, again, we have that check and balance in the step of the district attorney supporting it, and then we have that check and balance of going to a judge and having a judge support it. And then really, you know, the timeline starts. You have to serve it within 5 days. You have to give a return within 48 hours.
And I think what gets lost on the general public too, and you and I have talked about this before, the amount of paperwork that you have.
Yeah.
And you kind of always generalize it and say, oh, I'm, you know, working on paperwork and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I've heard other officers say, oh, I spent the morning doing paperwork.
Yeah.
And to the general person, you're like,
yeah. Well, what does that mean?
What kind of paperwork are you doing?
Here's a very common source of paperwork. We do a lot of documents to social media accounts and those types of things that we call preservation letters. And in essence, what that means is we'll send a preservation letter to Facebook, say. If we have somebody as a suspect that's in a crime, we'll send a preservation letter to Facebook. Facebook can't disclose that to the account holder. And that preserves that account as it is at the time that they receive that preservation letter. Meaning if Lori is a subject of an investigation and she catches wind that we're investigating her, she can't go back on Facebook and delete all of her stuff. She can, but Facebook already has a preservation letter saying, we want that data. We are going to follow this preservation up with a search warrant. Please hold this data for 30 days and expect a subpoena or a warrant from us. And we'll get that data at some point in time.
See, the internet really is forever.
Yeah, that is a very common tool that we have. And this isn't like a secret or anything.
No.
We have to do this. These companies require us to do this in order to get that data. So Snapchat.
Goes back to the guy Googling, how do I decompose a body? Like,
you know, Snapchat, Facebook, those are our two most common. But You know, any type of social media app, we do those preservation letters on a regular basis.
Yeah, and just because a Snapchat disappears doesn't mean that it's gone forever.
It's on a server someplace.
Yeah, somebody somewhere can dig that out for you.
I haven't for a number of years had the privilege of going through Snapchat records, but my detective and my lieutenant, Casey Cox, go through Snapchat records, and it is amazing what people snap each other.
I don't want to know.
I don't know either. They don't. They just say like, "Hey, you're not going to believe this. Like, this is over the top." So
wow. I mean, I guess I shouldn't be surprised. I shouldn't be shocked. But I am.
Yeah,
because it's
the world we live in.
Yeah. And the other thing I want to highlight, and I can't remember if we talked about this on air or off air, was all of the agencies that were working together.
Yeah.
You know, and even when I first saw the story, it was like, oh, he had been pulled over in Indiana, and I'm like, oh, what a fluke that they pulled him over in Indiana and like had no idea.
All planned.
That was planned.
Yeah.
And I mean, you said that that's, you know, not common, yeah, but something that happens.
Yeah.
You know, not an uncommon thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was just impressed, I guess, with the amount of agencies that were working together and kept everything.
So here's my thing is the amazing part for me is I can't imagine being the chief of, what was the city's name?
Moscow. Not Russia.
Idaho. And sitting back and watching the firestorm that is social media and just like a little smirk on your face. Like,
right?
if you people only knew.
Yeah.
What we know, you know, and there's a time and a place for that. Obviously, there's a reason why he went to Pennsylvania and,
yeah,
you know, he was a criminology student. I'm sure that they knew that relatively soon. And they, mm-hmm, knew that, you know, he might have some advantages as far as knowledge goes that the average criminal doesn't have. And so just brilliant. There's a period in my career that I think about often, and that is sitting in a vehicle on our way to serve a search warrant. And I always try to put myself in the shoes of the defendant that's sitting on their couch watching whatever TV show they're watching, and their world is about to change when we show up at their door. And it's just a time in my career where I'm like, I wonder what's going through that person's mind right now.
Because they have no idea.
As opposed to 5 minutes from now when we show up at their door. It's just interesting.
I'm sure it's really interesting for them too.
Well, maybe.
I mean, because most times they don't know you're coming.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole intent, is that they don't know that we're coming. But, you know, I don't know. It's just an interesting perspective.
It is. And
same for this guy. Like, I wonder what was going through his mind when he got pulled over twice.
Yeah.
Or did he think every time they let him go, like, ha-ha, I got away with it one more time. Yeah.
Gotcha.
I guarantee you there was some type of arrogance there where he was like,
well, what could have possibly been going through his mind? I mean, in those weeks that he was 10 miles away at Washington State still teaching classes.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, imagine, like I was thinking, imagine being a student in one of those classes.
Yeah. Well, and here's the other thing, you know, when and if this thing ever goes to trial, that to me as a prosecutor would be a very important point as far as to show the criminality behind this guy's mind, that he committed these acts and then just blended back into the community,
yeah,
like nothing happened. I mean, there's a certain level of just like, not care, no
I was
empathy,
gonna say,
zero empathy, negative empathy,
yes,
for human life.
You know,
it's creepy.
It's creepy is, yeah, the best
word. Yeah,
to,
I mean, it is. I don't know how else to describe it, but to just, you know, go back to your normal life like nothing happened is.
Yeah. And the other thing I wanted to bring up was there was another roommate that encountered the guy, and he didn't want to kill her. She, you know, just went back in her room, and then it was like the internet attacked her. Mm-hmm. And all I could think about was, you don't think that that person was probably the first stop for law enforcement?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
And they have the entire story of what happened, why she didn't call 911 till the next morning.
Yeah.
Or whenever.
Yeah.
It's not our job to judge her.
Right. Well, I think you're emphatically wrong by saying it's not our job to judge her, because if you open up social media, it turns out when you sign the user agreements for Facebook, in the fine print it says, thou shalt judge everyone.
Well, I didn't read the fine print.
Yeah, it's in Article 12, line 36, paragraph
10. I'm just here being nice, going, and
that's, of course, very sarcastic, but that is unfortunately the world we live in.
In my head, all I could think about was, if there was somebody in the house, that is who the cops are probably getting a great deal of information from.
Mm-hmm.
And they're either going to, okay, you're ruled out as a suspect, or, you know, they are a suspect, and then the investigation would have gone completely different. But, okay, you've been ruled out, but we need your help.
Mm-hmm.
What can you provide us? But also protecting them, too.
Well, the craziest part about that person is the smallest details that I think it was a female, right?
Mm-hmm.
The smallest details that girl gave.
Yeah.
Were
huge.
Yeah, were tremendous.
Huge. So yeah.
It's one of the things I used to do bank safety statement or presentations to the banks in town about, like, our response to bank alarms and those types of things. And that was one of the things I preached to them was, you know, the smallest detail you may find completely insignificant,
mm-hmm.
but for us, it is. You know, earth-shattering. I'm going to tell a story
here
real quick.
You better hope nobody ever breaks into the radio station and you need me as a witness.
I'm going to tell you a story here real quick.
I'm
going to go back many years. But
okay.
Many years ago, we had a car dealership that was broke into.
Okay.
It was a burglary in the middle of the night. And we were looking for suspects. And it was kind of like it is now. There was just a little bit of snow on the ground. Not a lot. You know, the ground wasn't completely covered, but there was snow. And so myself and Stacy Plotna, who eventually became our detective and has since passed away, we were working patrol together. And we enjoyed going to burglaries because we enjoyed solving them before the detective got called out. Whether that detective was Chad Abram or Terry Sprossy or Larry Cuff, we always just, it was a challenge that Stacy and I had where we were just like, let's get this. We can do this. And so I remember going to this and on, you know, on the plastic that your chairs roll across rather than your chairs rolling on the carpet, there's plastic
there's some right here.
Yeah, there you go. There was a shoe imprint on there and it was dust. There was dust and the dust was gone. And we had a very specific shoe imprint. And Stacy and I looked at each other when we saw that. We were like, we find that shoe, we've got our suspect. Well, as we did a canvas of the neighborhood, we were following footprints from this business and it led to an apartment. And so we ended up knocking on the apartment door and making contact with the folks that were inside. It was like an upper and a lower apartment. Mm-hmm. So these folks were in the upper apartment. And there were a pile of shoes at the bottom of the steps at this apartment. And while we were in the doorway, we saw what looked like that shoe impression. And so by process of elimination, we just asked each person in that apartment to come outside with us. And we pulled them outside because they all had to put their shoes on. And when the gentleman that reached for that pair of shoes grabbed those pairs of shoes, he was forced to come outside. There was no way he couldn't put shoes on because his you know, socks would be wet. Feet would be dirty.
Nobody wants that.
Yeah. And so he put the shoes on and we were like, bingo, we got it. And so we questioned that person at length and they ended up confessing to it. And we ended up getting into that apartment and through affidavits and search warrants. And found the credit card machine and a computer drive and items that were stolen from the business. So, you know, we were just patrol people. You know, we were just going to a burglary. But we just took that as a challenge of, hey, let's solve this. And within a couple hours, we was wrapped up.
I'm not gonna lie, I'm impressed.
Stacy was amazing. I mean, he was our detective for a number of years.
I'm just saying that's a lot of quick thinking steps. Well, that occurred.
Yeah, I mean, it was really simple at the end of the day, though.
Well, like, yeah, you know, that's what I'm saying.
It was very
logical and it was very simple.
Yeah.
Those
were like a blast. Those were the days. I miss those days, but you know, now I just sign,
now you just sit at your desk doing paperwork
and yeah.
It's not exciting at all. Do you ever wish there was a day that you could like look at one of your patrol officers or your detective and be like, you know what? Can I do this for a day?
No. Everything's changed. I mean, it just has. I've only been the chief for 4 years,
mm-hmm.
and policing, you know, policing changed. Nationwide has changed since then. And
that's why we do this, Kyle. I don't know if you remember.
Well, I know that I could. I mean, I could make the traffic stop, go to the call for service, put handcuffs on somebody.
Well, yeah, you were talking about a traffic stop you made earlier this week off air.
I can do all of that stuff. But I love what I do now. It's very rewarding to make sure that the people that do the job have the knowledge, skills, and abilities that they need to do that job, whether it's tools, resources, you know, funding, equipment, training, whatever it is. I really find that important on me to make sure that happens and that they can do the job to the best of their ability. So the reality is all of those people that I'm referencing will have a shot at my seat someday, and they'll do great, and they'll realize why I wouldn't trade it.
Very true. Yeah. I just, you know, there's like some days where I'm like, oh, maybe it'd be fun to go back to middays. Not wake up early in the morning.
Try it out.
Well, then I'd have to kick Cody out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But, well,
I think for a right amount of money, he'd probably go back to mornings.
I mean, he does really love when I text him at 4 in the morning asking him to come in.
I bet.
It's his favorite, I think. I bet.
Probably right after a ball game the night before or something, too.
Yeah, you know, like I looked the couple weeks ago and I had to text him. I looked at the schedule and I was like, oh, he was home last night. He's fine. He's fine. I mean, again, there's a lot more that happens behind the scenes than I think most people realize. Crimes don't get solved in 42 minutes.
Well, I mean, there's a lot more behind the
scenes. Unless it's Kyle Dinor and Stacey Palahniuk.
There's a lot more behind the scenes that happens at the police department that people don't know about. And that's at the
I'm
end of the day, that's
I'm just trying to highlight
it.
All of the things
no,
you
just,
do.
It's just the truth. And again, I'll put a plug in here for our Citizens Academy. You're a kind of a graduate of it. We are
I am
having
a graduate
another,
of it.
Skipped a couple classes. But anyways, truancy tickets in the mail. We're having that again this spring. If you want insight on these things, we share a lot.
There's so much I learned. Yeah. And I, you know, I've joked about this that before we start recording, I pick your brain.
Yeah, yeah.
And I swear every week you've got to like sit in your car and be like, I don't want to go deal with her. She's got so many questions for me. Like, what stupid question is she going to ask me this week?
It usually starts with, so I read this in my book.
How many times have I've screenshot pages of my book and sent it to you with text over it? Does this happen?
Yeah. Is this for real?
And sometimes you do tell me that it's true.
Sure, yeah. I mean, anything's possible.
Well, yeah. Well, okay.
I think, for instance, one of the things you sent me one time was like a crime lab showed up in
a
couple hours or whatever.
Yeah, it was like 2 hours that this crime lab was there on this it was a tiny rural little town.
Yeah.
And like within hours, the crime lab was there. And I was like, is that how that would work? Like if you had a murder, how long would it take a crime lab to show up?
Drive from Madison.
Okay.
That's the drive time.
And I was like, okay, I guess my book wasn't off.
Yep. There
they were maybe underestimating.
There you go.
See? I learned so much.
There's a reason why we do this show still.
There is a reason why. You unlocked a whole like level of questions in my mind.
Yeah. That's good.
And
I hope we do the same thing for the listeners.
I hope so too. Yeah. That's why we're doing this. So it's Coffee with Kyle, the extended version from Dunkin' Donuts here in Prairie du Chien.